You can watch and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway, Matt Walsh, Chris Roseborough, Greg Kokel, Hans Feeney, and Katie Faust at the 2020 Virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Making the Case is Friday, July 24th and Saturday, July 25th. The $135 registration fee includes both live and on-demand viewing. For more information and to register, visit issuesetc.org or give us a call, 618-223-8385.
I'm afraid that at this point, on subjects of politics, especially if it has anything to do with morality, culture, and religion, and Donald Trump, I'm afraid you're just going to have to do careful reading.
These Puritans, and I mean that not in the sense of Christian Puritans, but in ideological Puritans, they keep trying to purify themselves to the point where they outdo one another, and in the end, they have to eat one another. They literally are killing each other.
The culture is going to turn around, it seems, more and more to go after classical Christians. In a time of soft totalitarianism, as Rod Dreher calls it, or just outright persecution.
Lutherans could say, hold on, hold your horses here. Look back at the fathers. Here, listen to what they said. And that thus they were able to show that they were not teaching something novel, not teaching something heretical.
On-demand listeners of Issues Etc. love hearing sound theology while walking the dog.
Well, the Supreme Court had barely issued their decision in Vostok, where they expanded the notion of what is protected under the term sex in the 1964 Civil Rights Act. And already more than 100 members of Congress, Democratic members of the House, were calling for sweeping repeals of some Trump administration policies for the U.S. military and a bunch of other things as well. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. coming to you live on this Monday afternoon. It's the 20th of July. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about the Supreme Court's Vostok ruling and transgenderism in the U.S. military. Elaine Donnelly, president of the Center for Military Readiness, will be our guest. Dr. Kevin Golden joins us after that for a conversation on the Old Testament prophet Ezekiel. Then we're going to spend some time with Dr. Alvin Schmidt. There's a New York Times opinion column titled, Would the Prophet Muhammad Convert the Hagia Sophia? That was in the news, of course, this enormous and ancient church in Turkey now that has been a church, a mosque, a museum, and now is going back to being a mosque. The op-ed piece says Muhammad would not have converted it into a mosque. Is that true? Dr. Alvin Schmidt will answer that question for us. Joining us to talk about the Supreme Court's Vostok ruling and transgenderism in the U.S. military, Elaine Donnelly. She's president of the Center for Military Readiness, author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Vostok Ruling Shouldn't Make the Military a Transgender Free for All. Elaine, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Yes. Hi, Todd. How are you?
I'm fine. What was the Vostok case about, and how was it decided?
Recently, the Supreme Court, out of the blue to many people, decided that Title VII of the 1964 Civil Rights Act banned employment discrimination on grounds of sexual orientation or gender identity. Now, this was extremely controversial because there's nothing in the record of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 to indicate that that's what Congress intended. 30 out of 30 lower courts in other cases over five decades have refused to extend the ban against sexual discrimination to the concept of sexual orientation, much less gender identity. 30 out of 30. But the Supreme Court decided this anyway, in that way. And Neil Gorsuch decided that, well, Congress must have intended this. He's really not basing that on anything in the record. Justices Samuel Alito and Clarence Thomas strongly dissented. They described that opinion as preposterous. The majority's argument is not only arrogant, it is wrong. And yet, that is a Supreme Court ruling. It is the law of the land. But there's some interesting things about it. Some members of Congress were triggered to say, oh, well, that means the policy regarding transgenders in the military ought to be revoked. So they got together, and over 100 of them, and they wrote a letter to the Secretary of Defense and demanded administrative revoking of the policy. They're also sponsoring legislation to that effect, which possibly will come up very soon for a vote in the Senate. And they're calling on the Department of Justice to stop fighting the issue in court. So they're trying to take advantage of the Bostock decision, even though, and this is very interesting, the Civil Rights Act does not even apply to the military. We know this because the military is not just another equal opportunity employer. It has to be governed by different rules. And you can't say, well, I have a civil right not to be sent to war or anything like that. Once you're in the military, you have to follow orders. It's not the same as any other equal opportunity employer. So the Civil Rights Act doesn't apply. The interpretation of the Civil Rights Act, therefore, does not apply. And Congress should not be hustled into a vote to repeal this policy with legislation.
How do you respond to someone who says that the Bostock decision would require the changes that the Democratic House members are calling for?
Well, it wouldn't happen automatically. It could happen administratively, although that's unlikely that the Secretary of Defense will do what is being demanded here. I doubt the Department of Justice is going to drop their case. There's litigation winding its way through the court. Ultimately, it will probably get to the Supreme Court, and it still has a good chance of being upheld as constitutional. The reason is that in the Bostock decision, the justices said, well, we're only settling this narrow issue here. We're not taking on all the other issues involved when you say that gender identity doesn't matter, including issues involving, say, women's athletics. That's an issue that is extremely controversial in the civilian world, but even in the military, we have women's teams at the military service academies. Every base in the world has male and female teams. If the mandate comes down, now you can't take gender identity into consideration, and if the policy is repealed, well, then you'll have the same problems in the military that we're seeing in the civilian world already. That would not be helpful to good order and discipline and morale. And that's only one issue. And it's not even the most important issue. But it's one that could be forced upon the armed forces if the demands are met to eliminate the 2018 Department of Defense policy.
So in some detail, what is the current Defense Department policy on transgender members of the military?
Well, for one thing, it is not a ban on transgenders in the military. Contrary to claims that it is, the current policy, and it followed 6 months of review, by the way, and a comprehensive Defense Department report, it is not based on gender identity, and it doesn't ban enlistment or retention of transgender people as a class. The policy is based on a medical condition. It's called gender dysphoria. Gender dysphoria is a psychological condition, and it affects personal readiness to deploy and other factors. Now, there's a grandfather provision for people who came out as transgender under the Barack Obama policies, but the 2018 policy says, okay, someone who used to be or is transgender, says they're transgender, they can serve in their biological sex, and that's a very important caveat there, if they meet deployability requirements and have been stable, that is, without gender dysphoria for 36 months, 3 years. So if Congress should vote for repeal, they would be endorsing the unscientific notion that sex is designated or assigned at birth. That's an ideological theory. It disregards biology because science knows very well that sex is determined long before birth in human DNA, and it exists from the moment of conception in every cell of a person's body. So the Departments of Justice and Education have recognized this. They're saying that female athletes don't have to compete against biological males. But if DOD were forced to take another road, then the military services would have to pretend that biological sex doesn't matter. And there would be an awful lot of consequences from that, which were presaged under what happened under the Obama administration.
What are the priorities of the military? Why does the current policy make sense given those priorities?
Well, because the military is there to defend the country. Equal opportunity considerations always are important. But if there is a conflict between the career desires of some people or equal opportunities and the needs of the military, well, the needs of the military have to come first. It's a very simple principle. But those who are advocating for the transgender policy to be repealed, they're saying, oh no, career opportunities are more important, the most important thing, and that the military should pay any price and carry any burden to make it happen. Well, there are consequences. The Department of Defense looked at the data from the Military Health System Data Repository. They looked at 994 active duty service members who were diagnosed with gender dysphoria during the last years of the Obama administration. They found that this small group, less than 1,000, accounted for 30,000 mental health visits, a 300% increase in the individual medical costs, and an awful lot of lost time as well. That affects military readiness. They also found high rates of mental health conditions such as anxiety, depression, substance abuse, and the saddest thing of all are suicides, suicide ideations, that is, thoughts of suicide, at 8 times more likely they occurred among those with gender dysphoria compared to service members as a whole. So what you would have if the policy, the 2018 policy, went away, medical professionals, doctors and nurses, would have to provide expensive long-term hormone or surgical treatments for people who say they're transgender, they want to transition to a different sex. Now, the doctors and nurses would not be able to dissent regardless of their medical ethics concerns, their religious convictions. It would be a mandate within the military, and it would cause many people to leave if their convictions are quite different. All of these kinds of issues, I haven't even talked about the privacy things affecting women in private facilities. If all of these social agendas are imposed on the military, you have problems that you don't need. There's really no excuse for doing this because, you see, there are a lot of conditions, both physical and psychological, that make a person ineligible for military service. What's being demanded here is special treatment for people who have gender dysphoria that really cannot be justified. And we also know that if we go down this route, issues of religious liberty for chaplains and people of faith, that comes into play. Mandatory gender-preferred pronouns, causing an awful lot of confusion and demoralizing incidents in the ranks. These are things that were reported in the Obama administration and the Trump administration. When their report came out, they listed all of these things. And the president said, well, we're not going to do that, but the policy that the president adopted in March 2018, it's not right to say that it's the same as the tweets that he had sent out 6 months earlier in July of 2017. So it was a carefully considered policy. It's being challenged in court right now. It has a good chance of being upheld as constitutional, unless, of course, Congress intervenes and does something to vote to revoke the 2018 policy. That would be a big mistake.
We're talking about the Supreme Court's Bostick ruling and transgenderism in the U.S. military. Elaine Donnelly, president of the Center for Military Readiness, is our guest. We'll talk about some other factors that affect morale in the military after the break.
Protecting the most vulnerable, especially children, is a critical principle throughout Scripture. And the main vehicle that God has instituted to protect children is marriage.
Katie Faust talking about her presentation at this year's virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
Adults, especially Christian adults, should never ask a child to sacrifice their fundamental right to be known and loved by both their mother and father just so an adult can have something that they want. That means adults need to do hard things in their own lives, and that also means that adults, especially Christians, need to fight for child-centric public policy as well.
You can watch Katie Faust's presentation, Making the Case for Children's Rights, at the 2020 Virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, July 24th and Saturday, July 25th. Conference registrants can watch live and on demand. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc. The Simply Classical curriculum for special needs moves at my child's pace and gives her exactly what she needs. So writes Amber, a homeschooling mother who has joined thousands in homes and schools teaching from this uniquely Christian classical approach to special education. Teach students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome based on ability level rather than chronological age. Use promo code LPR20 today at classicalspecialneeds.com. Classicalspecialneeds.com.
Your church's chrismons are from the 80s. They're made of styrofoam, their glitter is shedding, and they're held together with toothpicks. Now is the perfect time to replace them with AdChrisman's Christmas in July sale. Participating artists have discounted their products, so stock up on jewelry, crucifixes, art, church banners, music, greeting cards, and more. Discounts range from 10 to 50% off. Visit us at adchrisman.com to take advantage of the sale. That's adchrusem.com.
We're talking about the Supreme Court's Bostock ruling and transgenderism in the U.S. military. Elaine Donnelly is our guest, president of the Center for Military Readiness. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Elaine, you mentioned some of these before, but go into some detail about the other factors that would affect morale in the military if the current policy were repealed.
Well, I think it all comes down to a denial of reality. Once you are forced to deny reality, if you look at a person who is obviously a biological male, and you are required to treat that person as if he is a woman in all respects, it really does cause an awful lot of psychological dissonance and demoralizing conflicts that we don't need. When the Obama administration came out with their handbook, How to Resolve Controversies, you had things in there like, and I'm not making this up, what to do when the male soldier comes to you and announces that he is pregnant. How do you deal with that? There's a whole lot of other issues and a lot of problems which were supposed to be resolved by LGBT activists, not by medical or psychological professionals, much less chaplains, because any view disagreeing would not be allowed in the military. So it's a pretty far-reaching policy, and it's one that we're seeing, again, in the civilian world, a lot of controversies. But these kinds of controversies and problems would detract from readiness. It makes it a national security issue. And I would add just one thing. People who have gender dysphoria require competent medical treatment and compassion from their families. But we don't need political decisions that harm the military. This kind of administrative or congressional action that's being demanded would really be harmful to the armed forces. It would do nothing to strengthen our military. But if this kind of legislation got into the defense bill, well, President Trump would have a reason to veto the defense bill. More information on that and all the issues involved are on our webpage, www.cmrlink.org. And people should be in touch with their members of the Senate, especially the Senate and the House as well, if something should happen between now and the end of the year.
It is claimed that 2/3 of military personnel support transgender people serving in the military. What do you make of that claim?
Well, earlier this year, this so-called poll came out. It was a micro survey, actually, done by academics out in California, UCLA, and USC. They used LGBT vocabulary. It was a very limited, small sample, and they decided to describe it as a Pentagon survey, but it wasn't. The Department of Defense did not sponsor that survey. It was designed to issue a news release and create a perception that really does not exist. So every once in a while you hear someone say, oh, but there's been a survey showing 2/3 of military people are all for transgenders in the military. No, it's based on an academic, very small poll that is not a genuine description of what happened, and it certainly is not an excuse for congressional action.
Why is the U.S. military so often used as, in effect, a laboratory for social experimentation?
That's a very good question. The reason is that the military is different than the civilian world. Everyone must follow orders. Its mission is to defend the country. Lives are at risk. This is why we respect those who volunteer to serve. The military defends individual rights, but it must be governed by different rules. in our system of government, Congress makes the rules for the military, and everyone must follow orders. So if you have members of Congress who, like Senator Collins and Senator Gillibrand of New York, they're saying, well, we want to open the military to people with gender dysphoria. If they succeed in the political world, if they get this amendment on the defense bill for 2021, then everybody in the military must salute and say, aye, aye, sir, and make it happen. That's why the institution is very vulnerable to social justice warriors, because they come along and for political reasons and ideology, they impose demands on the armed forces and there is no option to dissent. That is unlike anything in the civilian world. And yes, it does make the military a prime venue for social engineering. Quite often, what happens in the military is used as proof that it's okay in the civilian world. In the case of the transgender agenda, the civilian world is ahead of the military, and the civilian agenda should not be imposed on the military because the consequences would be even worse. So although, as I mentioned, athletics is important, that's less important in the military, although it is important to those who play sports, because, well, sports are only part of the issue here. I think the medical doctors and nurses and their concerns about medical ethics, the treatments to change a person's gender, supposedly, they have very high risk of side effects, very high rates of suicides and suicide ideation. But doctors and nurses who see this and want to dissent, they would have no option. That is, no option but to leave. So we can't afford to lose a lot of doctors and nurses for that reason. So I think the president's done the right thing. His policy, as I said, is nuanced. It is not a flat ban on transgenders. It's based on gender dysphoria. This is a medical condition, a psychological condition. It is reasonable. It certainly is consistent with other policies about eligibility. And the Supreme Court decision, the Bostock ruling, which does not affect the military, the Civil Rights Act does not affect the military, that is no excuse for legislative action or administrative action that would impose that agenda on the armed forces.
Elaine Donnelly is president of the Center for Military Readiness, author of a recent column for The Federalist titled, Bostock Ruling Shouldn't Make the Military a Transgender Free for All. You'll find a link to this column and to the Center for Military Readiness at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Elaine, thanks.
Thank you, Todd.
We'll be remembering the Old Testament prophet Ezekiel, remembered by the church on the 21st of July. Dr. Kevin Golden will be our guest. Stay tuned. What is God calling you to do? What is the one thing you were born to do? Are you truly doing what you're called to do? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July is Callings for Life, God's Plan, Your Purpose. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or learn more about Callings for Life at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Callings for Life, God's Plan, Your Purpose.
Timeless truth that prepares scholars to serve their neighbor in all of life through their various vocations. This is what scholars receive at Wittenberg Academy. If you are looking for a solidly Lutheran online education for your child, consider Wittenberg Academy, where doctrine is sound, academics are rigorous, and relationships are genuine. We offer full-time, part-time, and diploma track options to meet your child's Lutheran education needs. We partner with brick-and-mortar schools and homeschools. You can find out more at wittenbergacademy.org.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Epiphany Lutheran Church in Door, Michigan, gathers to receive our Lord's gifts in Word, Baptism, and Supper every Sunday morning at 9:15. Bible study at 11. Join us at 4219 Park Lane in Door, or visit us on the web, epiphanydoor.org. Christ-centered, cross-focused, historic, confessional, liturgical. Epiphany Lutheran Church in Door, Michigan. EpiphanyDoor.org. 616-681-0791.
This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We're devoted to our Lutheran confession and committed to strong academics. Please encourage your child, grandchild, or godchild to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.